This is Fail Farrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. Got some things done and able to get some things resolved. And everything seems to be puttering along. So I think I mentioned last week that we were in the middle of a problem that we had not resolved. And that did get resolved. That's the punchline. But it's just very interesting to be in the middle of those things. We had small groups last Thursday night, which of course we will have again this Thursday night. And it was interesting because I was chatting with the small group and I was chatting about the fact that I was in between these times, you know, that we had worked on a problem, we had not been successful, we would be doing it again, working on it again on Friday. And I mentioned that it was beneficial to have these types of things because it gives you that chance to see how you will respond when God suddenly turns silent. That you're right in the middle of a crush and suddenly he is silent. And what do we do in those situations? Well, we trust him and we just move forward as best we can. As it turns out, on Friday, we had gotten back together at 10:30 because I hadn't intended for everyone to wait for me to get back, but in fact, everybody did wait for me to get back. And so, you know, I got back. They had scheduled to start back up at 10:30 on Friday. So then we hopped along and we probably worked for another 2 hours before it finally broke loose and we discovered what was going on. And it was a collusion of a lot of interesting things. It was very difficult to understand what was going on for a while because we weren't getting data written. But the synopsis of it is there's two major chunks of the end of month process for our missionaries. The first chunk calculates all the data for the statements as to who gets what money. And then the second chunk goes ahead and creates all the files for all the various systems that have to be exported to. That second chunk, which we call EOM2, is the only chunk that we can run step by step and rerun other steps in there, because each step is fairly well isolated from all the other steps because they're all going out to various systems. So we had moved database servers last month and moved to a brand new database server, bounced up a lot of versions. So the philosophy was, well, since we bounced the database servers, why don't we just go ahead and run these things step by step by step? Because we can do that. So if we had just pushed the button and let the thing fly, it probably would have just gone through without any errors. But what had happened was we had an error on one thing that was some kind of a permissioning error down in the PowerShell script. So that kind of raised our antennas a little bit. And then we started checking data outputs and not just relying on whether it completed successfully or not. And we found that the very next section was not putting out any data at all. Okay, so we've got these two things. We know there's this one thing that's not actually being output. Now we know that the second thing below that is not actually creating any data. And we're looking through that, and that's what we're trying to resolve. Well, it was a lot of trips around the barn, but Jesus was very kind, and we finally figured out what was going on. As I said, if we had run the whole section, it probably would have run by itself and been fine, with the exception of a few PowerShell script oddities. But the rest of the really important stuff would have been fine, and we would have had all the files for the electronic disbursement of money all done on Thursday. As it turns out, that's not what happened. Because running things by step had this deep logic bomb in it. And no one put that logic bomb in there purposefully. It's just one of those things. And it just so happened that the four steps in EOM 2 that we were having problems with were the four or five steps in there that had different logic for rerunning those steps than for just running those steps the first time. Rerunning those steps did not reload the data. And unbeknownst to us, the statuses for what was running were getting set before the poll was being done for what type of running the step should be doing. So normally if you set the steps and the section to runnable, then that says, oh yeah, run it like it's the first time through. But if it's set to running or completed or anything like that, then it's going to try to rerun the steps, not run the steps. And there's different stored procedures. And it's only on these four or five guys that there are different stored procedures. Well, as it turns out, the way the code was written, it was setting steps and sections to running before it did the poll to find out whether it should run or rerun those steps. So as long as you were just running it in bulk from the section, you were fine, but it had never worked correctly to run it step by step. Just so happened whenever we did things in the past running step by step, we hadn't run those steps. Those particular steps. So they never worked right. And we've been running on this system for years and years, and they have never worked right. And it just so happened, because of the way we were testing, that we hit that logic bomb. So, you know, once we realized what happened there, then we corrected the logic bomb, which really just consisted of copying whatever 10 to 12 lines of code and dropping it down and inserting it below a statement. And once we did that, ta-da, in two places, we had to update it in two places to get it so that it was written correctly. Ta-da! Problems disappear. We just marched it through and got everything built. By that time, though, it was 2 o'clock-ish in the afternoon on Friday, and people had already gone home, but they got it all worked out and got the money sent to missionaries, and I think some missionaries had their funds delayed a day. But you know, there you go. So that was very, very entertaining. But we got it done. We got it done. Yay. Thank you, Jesus. But for a while there, we were just like, why isn't this writing any data out? And we had like four guys working on it. And all told, the four of us put in 8 hours apiece each on that. So that was an expensive little logic bomb to find. And then, I mean, it didn't take anything to fix. By the time we figured out what the problem was, I mean, literally it's a 2-minute fix, but glory. So, yeah, so little excitement there, but we got it done. Yay. And then we were very happy that we got it done. And it was a good weekend. So, yeah. So, writing is going fine on book 20. Had just a lovely conversation with a therapist at church on Saturday, and then it continued into Sunday. I had never met the man, but apparently he's a therapist, and I had gone to church on Saturday as part of our worship team / prayer greeters, and there was a man sitting behind me, and when we split up into smaller groups to do some prayer, after we prayed and did that kind of thing, he said, "I've got a question for you." I said, "Sure." He said, "What started the costumes? Why did you start the costumes?" Which, of course, that leads to a whole discussion about gender designation and systems analysis on gender differences. And, you know, to really understand why I started the costumes, you really have to have those pieces. So I just kind of quickly ran through some of that stuff, kind of gave them a context, and then kind of talked to them about the experimentation. That continued over then. We were supposed to break up and do some other things. So then that continued over. I saw him on Sunday and we started talking again and continued over onto kind of the social experimentation that I've been doing with those gender relationship stuff and the benefit that it's had for my marriage and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We certainly didn't exhaustively cover everything, but at least kind of I gave him a taste of it. And he actually found it very interesting. I have spoken to other people who are in the mind sciences in the past, and they have not necessarily found my ideas interesting because they're kind of outside the standard models. But he found it very interesting, and he actually told me on Sunday, after we had chatted, he said, I actually was thinking about that. And he said, it's very interesting of, you know, doing the spectrum of lust and fear and seeing how male and female cluster in different areas. So who knows? We may go out to breakfast or something, discuss those more and, you know, discuss the ramifications of them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, but that, it was very interesting. And had some good conversations. So that was in through the weekend. Then, of course, been working. As far as the writing goes this week, I am behind. I just am behind. I had sadness this week. sadness. I had my Galaxy Gear 3 Frontier for 5 years. I've had this watch. I know that in 2019, I bought a new battery for it. So that's 4 years ago, and I probably would not have bought a new battery for it without having at least a couple of years under my belt and thinking that the battery was going bad. So yeah, I've had that for 5 or 6 years. Well, the battery was getting worse, it wouldn't charge, and I had a battery for it, and so I thought, I'll just replace the battery. Apparently, I did something to kill it. I killed my Watch 3. It's probably a ribbon cable that got kinked or something, and so I thought, well, might as well go ahead and buy another watch. So I was in the process of that whole thing of not having a watch and trying to figure out what was going in, trying to do some research as to what I was going to buy. Needless to say, Sunday, there were too many distractions. I did not get my 3,000 words in on Sunday, even though I'm in a fairly easy part to write. And I have yet to climb back up out of missing those 1,500 words, so I will probably try to get a little bit of that done this evening, but I'm far enough ahead on this book. It's going to be fine if I just don't bother with it. And at the same time, I'm rushing to get the Lion King costume done because that's coming up, but I'll talk about that in a minute. And so, you know, between those two things, I'm just playing behind. There's no doubt this week. But overall, I'm fine because I had like a couple of extra weeks, so it should be fine. Theoretically, I just have 6 weeks in this writing sprint, so theoretically, I only need to get to 60,000 words in this writing sprint for book 20. But it looks like the way everything is lining out that I will be at 80 or 90,000 words. So I'm going to be way ahead, all things being equal, and if everything goes as I hope it will. So I'm good. But book 20 is coming along fine. There's going to be some interesting ground-changing stuff in book 20, and I think it very reasonably is going to set us up, you know, to go roaring to the end. So I will still have 4 books, but there's plenty of material to get through there. So I think that's going to be fine. Yeah. So, anyways, so that's good. So writing is good. Costumes are going fine. I think I'm going to be fine on this Lion King mask I've been working on for Lion King on Broadway 25th anniversary. Sure seems like I'm going to be okay. I'm getting the last of the raw pieces in place. I still have the nose to do to finish up. I've got some pieces on the nose, but I'm finishing up on the rest of the nose. This last week it was the jaw and the lower part of the jaw, getting that squared away coming back from vacation, and then I have the nose to do, and then I have the area right under the nose but before the lower jaw, so that kind of upper lip area, I have that to do. That's pretty straightforward, but there's some odd angles in there. And then once I get all that done, then I've got to make the final commits to cutting the last pieces of the foam and then start building. So I intentionally, because I wasn't sure how it was going to work out, from the cheekbones down to where you're getting into the jaw area, I intentionally cut the foundation for that too long so that I would have a chance to build everything and make a mistake, potentially, so that when I shortened that particular piece up to the length that I thought I needed, I would have already worked out all the angles. So once I get the upper lip worked out as far as the foam goes, then I've got to make the final cut on that. But, you know, it's not the end of the world if I don't do it correctly, because it's just a foundational piece, and I think I have more of that particular foam, and if I don't, I can get more of that particular foam, and nothing has been glued yet, so, you know, we'll be okay one way or another. But it's just sometimes you're making that, it's like, now we're doing it. So anyway, so this has been really, really interesting. Even after I get all these foundational pieces on and I get the mask made, then I have to finish out. Once I get the lion face done, there's a lot of other things around it. For the Mufasa mask, for Lion King on Broadway. If you haven't seen it, you should look up Lion King on Broadway Mufasa mask. Mufasa. Mufasa mask. Because it's a really gorgeous mask, and mine won't look like that, but at least it will be a reasonable facsimile. I hope. So we'll see. But I think once I get the lion face done and glued together, you know, then it's a matter of the accoutrements and the decorations around it, which I think those are going to be pretty easy to do. Then it's painting, and then it's actually making the thing sit on my head, but I have some ideas for that already, and it has to do with Warbler. Is it Warbler? I think it's called Warbler, which is a heat-shaped plastic. You can get, you know, the black Warbler, and you heat it up, and then you just put it on your head. I probably will put a stocking cap on first because I don't want it gluing itself to my hair. But you know, put it on your head, and then you just heat it up with a heat gun, shape it to your head, and then when it dries, you kind of have a helmet you can just slip off and slip on, and boom, you're ready to go. So that should be fine. We'll just see how this all works out. Today, just real quick, I obviously am on my gravel drive, and I will need to get done here fairly quickly because we have small groups coming over, so I gotta get that stuff under control. But just quick, I came across an article that I thought was interesting just for the sake of the article, but then I thought was even more interesting for the sake of what the article left out, at least in my opinion. Because it's very interesting. So anyways, the name of the article was, "What was the first banned book in history?" And I thought, oh, that would be interesting to find out. So of course I clicked on the link. And it was just a short little article, kind of had gone through book banning. And it starts out, I was getting my mail, backing up now. It starts out saying, "There's no more potent evidence of the power of the written word than the fact that people have historically looked to ban them." Okay, well, right. So, not even Dr. Seuss, Theodore Geisel, not even Dr. Seuss has been exempt. The Lorax, 1971, was ostracized as political commentary. And then later on, of course, it was ostracized by all the woke people, you know, pointing fingers and yada, 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 and saying, we got to ban this book because it's terrible, and you know, all that stuff. So let me go ahead and get tucked back into the garage here, and we'll just chat about this really quickly. I love my little backup camera that I installed. I love it. The only problem coming home at night is my garage faces west, and as such, it puts a lot of light right where I need to see, and it's not great. So, but you know, that's okay. It's okay. We'll get her done. Okay, backing into my garage. A little backup camera is so much fun. Okay. Okay. So let me just get tucked in here real quick, and we'll take care of this. So, wow, that is really tight. Let me try one more time. I didn't quite get lined up correctly. It's hard to see. There we go. Okay, now, hopefully I won't crunch anything here. It's going to be a whole lot easier to get out of the car if I'm not right up against something. Whoa. Too close. I usually don't have this much trouble. Oh, man. Okay, let me try it here. Yeah, okay, that's better. Okay, good. Okay, there we go. Okay, so let me just turn this on. We'll do this. So, going back to the article, cultural norms, politics, personal beliefs, school policy, and other factors can all conspire to deem a book too incendiary to circulate in America. But just how far back does this policy of thinly veiled thought control, that's an important, thinly veiled thought control go? As is often the case, when you look back into history, there's more than one possible answer, but one of the leading contenders has a fairly predictable culprit. Okay. Thinly veiled thought control. Fairly predictable culprit. The Puritans. Okay. In 1637, a man named Thomas Morton published a book titled The New English Canaan. It was a searing indictment of conservative Puritan life, which Morton had brushed up against after moving to Massachusetts. Compared to the entrenched and reserved culture of the era, Morton was a hedonist who liked to party as much as one could party at the time. Dancing around a maypole was considered risque. He was also friendly to Native Americans, which the Puritans didn't like. So this obviously, you know, he was eventually ostracized from the area and later filed a lawsuit over his forced relocation. In the community's eyes, Morton wasn't just a prototype frat boy. He was a direct threat on their way of life. His book was perceived as an all-out attack on Puritan morality, so they banned it and effectively banned Morton, too. He was refused entry back into Massachusetts and remained persona non grata until his death in 1643. Other books challenged for their content around the time were The Political Theory, The Christian Commonwealth by Puritan rabble-rouser John Eliot, and another anti-Puritan screed, The Meritorious Price of Our Redemption by William Picton in the 1630s. You can go back and find other examples. Back between 259 BC and 210 BCE, Chinese Emperor Qin Shi Huang executed 450 Confucius scholars by burying them alive. The idea was that it's easier to prevent authors from writing things in the first place if they're dead. In 35 CE, Caligula, certainly a man of strong moral stuff if there ever was one, wink, wink, discouraged people from reading Homer's Odyssey because it would give them a taste of what it was meant to be free. In modern times, killing writers became frowned upon. Books are often challenged on the basis of subjective ideas of obscenity in legal chambers. More persuasive attitudes in the 60s and 70s that pushed the envelope helped dampen that argument, and the idea of a banned book as a source of ridicule experienced a surge in the 1980s. When booksellers at the American Booksellers Association Book Expo decided to make a spectacle out of the practice, organizers locked more than 500 books banned by libraries, schools, and communities in a large cage and left it on the show floor. Along with the American Liberty Association and National Association of College Stores, the ABA helped introduce Banned Book Week to raise awareness. Though it certainly hasn't eliminated the practice, it has helped shed a light on the dangers of censorship. Yet another phrase. What book bans and censors attempt to do in curtailing of reading is often futile. In some cases, it can be dangerous to their health. Around 1497, Guglielmo Savarino, a Florentine who fancied himself a kind of moral dictator, turned up his nose at jokes, sex, and any kind of vice. Savonarola burned books, poems, and painting by the pile in great bonfires. Did this keep Florence's piousness intact? Not exactly. In 1498, Savonarola attended another bonfire. That time, he was the disagreeable element getting burned. Okay, so the whole attitude of this article is about books being banned and how terrible it is and how it's censorship and how it's thought thinly veiled thought control and how, and the whole article is pointed towards books that are being banned by more conservative people. Not once, not once in this article is there any reflection to say, you know, cancel culture, this business of someone saying something wrong and the thought policing come and telling you what you can think and what you can't think and people ostracizing and people suppressing free speech. Not once is there a connection made in this article between banning books and the type of things that what had been and does happen now on social media. It's like this. There's this huge blind spot of this book banning stuff is really bad. But all this other stuff that's going on in our society, well, that's just, it's not even mentioned. It's like, yeah, don't ban books. Oh, well, okay. But the modern book banning that's happening on social media, are we fine with that? Aren't we suppressing free speech? Do we really think that's going to succeed? Have we really not tried to apply the lessons of book banning to the other things that are going on in our existence? And the answer is no, we have not. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.